Welcome back again to BadQuaker.com podcast. Today is Wednesday, September 28th, and this is our 28th podcast, episode 28. I'm Ben.
And I'm Kai.
What'd you start
saying? And our 28th listener gets a free donut. Just go down to your local donut shop and tell them BadQuaker.com sent you. I'm sure they'll take care of you.
Yeah, that'll work. Donut not included. Oh boy, now I'm off rhythm. Well, like I was ever on rhythm, right? Like I have rhythm.
Donut offer only valid in states beginning with Z.
Yeah. Yeah, great. So somebody in Zimbabwe is going, I get the donut, yeah! Finally! I've been waiting and waiting, I finally get the donut! Our one and only listener in Zimbabwe.
Hey, if we get a listener in Zimbabwe,
and we'll
email
him
me,
yeah.
And I will send you...
I will mail you a donut. It may not be edible when it gets there. May not get through customs. But that's what we'd have to do. We'd have to email them a donut.
Yeah.
Because regular mail, it'd never get there.
No.
So if there's a listener in Zimbabwe, email us, Ben at BadQuaker.com or Kai, K-I, at BadQuaker.com, and we will email you a fresh donut. Guaranteed fresh. Speaking of email, we did get some email we should cover. I don't know if I mentioned this on a podcast already or not, but... one of our listeners is an artist and sent and has some art. I think I should have pulled up the email and read it before I started talking about it. But anyway, so I'll just talk about what I know about, not what I think I remember. But anyway, this listener, who is an artist, sent me two nice pieces of art.
They cannot see your hands.
They cannot see my hand. My hands are doing a thing right now, displaying the art with my hands. And what I've been waiting to do, I've wanted to do this, but we had a lot of stuff going on in September and going away for health issues with family members and things like that. I didn't get to do it, but I want to take these down to the local print shop and have proper posters made out of them. Because they're really nice, and when I do, I'll go ahead and have put pictures of that on the website. But they're really cool pieces of art, and I really want to get those printed out. In addition to that, we also have one of our listeners in South Korea who has emailed me a couple times, and one of the things that he emailed me about, let me pull this up, this story. Well, two things. One is a quick mention. A shelter that was put up at the same time in Moscow that they're erecting a statue in recognition of Mother Teresa's accomplishments, a shelter, a homeless shelter and a shelter for the disabled, is being torn to the ground by the city because it didn't have its paperwork correct. So while the city of Moscow is putting up a bronze statue of Mother Teresa, their bulldozers are tearing down the shelter that her order was running for, to help the homeless and the disabled. It's kind of a little ironic twist there, how the state will pat you on the back with one hand and stab you in the back with the other hand. Mm-hmm. And then the other story was about people in Uganda, perhaps as many as 20,000 villagers, farmers, regular people in Uganda, are being displaced and left homeless so that the Ugandan government can use that land for its carbon offset program. So let's get this straight. People in places like Europe and the United States and Canada and there's some of the richest people in the world, which I know, you know, you're sitting in your cafe in San Francisco sipping your latte, or you're in Seattle and you're
wondering if you can afford that Wii, or, you know, if you're just going to have to settle with the Xbox that you have.
Mm-hmm. These people sitting in the lap of luxury like humans have never experienced in their history are saying, oh, we must do something to help the environment and save the planet from global warming. Meanwhile, your do-goodiness encourages the government of Uganda to displace 20,000 people off their property so that the Ugandan government can get carbon credits mm-hmm. from the UN and shove money into the pockets of the Ugandan government. Mm-hmm. Like the state there needs more subsidies and more, you know, more looting, essentially. Yeah. So this is the aspect, you know, Bastiat said there's that which is seen and that which is not seen. And these idiots in these rich cities think, they drive around in their SUVs and they're like, oh, can't we just do something to save the environment? Can't we save the world from global warming? I know. You just go ahead and live your lifestyle like you were. As long as you're separating your garbage out and recycling it, and you can feel good about that.
And once a year you buy carbon credits.
Yeah, and what does that do? That drives a villager off their property, their ancestral property, so that you can feel better as you're separating your garbage in Seattle.
Yeah.
Even though the whole recycling garbage thing has been thoroughly debunked
mm-hmm.
by how many people?
Yeah.
Floyd Lilly did a wonderful article on recycling and trash. I probably should find a link to that. Penn and Teller did a whole thing. Penn and Teller, have you seen the Penn?
I have, yeah. Oh, we have it on DVD.
I love that. Where they start lining up trash can after trash can after trash can. And it's like, okay, you got 14 trash cans now to recycle. And the people are like, no, I can imagine myself doing this.
Yeah.
You pathetic tool.
Yeah. Yep. And it's funny because this problem, this idea that there is a pollution problem. Pollution is caused by a lack of property rights.
Exactly.
And the lack of property rights is caused by an interfering state.
Exactly.
And so, to solve this problem that was caused by an interfering state, we're going to turn to the interfering state.
Yeah. Harry Brown said, the state breaks your leg, then hands you a crutch and tells you, without the state, you couldn't walk.
Yeah.
And that's so classic. It's, you know, the state creates the drug problem. Then the state creates the drug war. Then the state says, okay, we're going to solve the drug problem with more laws and more force and more violence. Really?
Yeah.
The state creates gun problems, you know, as far as gun crime goes. The state creates the problem by disarming people and therefore changing the way people interact with each other. Then, once gun crimes continue, because, hey, guess what? Bad guys ignored the law.
Yeah.
I'm shocked.
That's why they're criminals.
Anyway, then the state decides, okay, well, we'll fix this problem by cracking down on more gun laws.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Here's one. This wasn't, we hadn't even talked about this, but I'm going to miss the guy. I can't remember the guy's name. I believe it was on 60 Minutes, or I think it was on 60 Minutes. There was some bureaucratic stuff shirt from the city of New York. Anyway, I can't remember his name, but this New York City stuff shirt bureaucrat was on, I think it was 60 Minutes, or one of these quasi-news shows on the network drones. And he's all tough on terrorism, tough on crime and all this. And he says, ever since 9/11... the city of New York figured out that we couldn't depend on the federal government to protect us. So we've put together the capability to, his words, bring down, you can't see my quote marks right now, I'm doing the finger quote thing, bring down an airplane. We can bring, the New York Police Department can bring down an airplane.
Okay. First thing that's wrong with that. Number one, you've got a plane. Let's say the terrorists are going to hijack a plane again, and they're going to fly it into a building in New York again.
Let me throw this in first. Idiots always fight the last war.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
So, let's pretend that that this is going to happen, okay? So they're flying their plane into the city of New York. And the New York City Police Department are like, oh no, there's a plane. We need to shoot it down. There's nowhere in New York that that plane can crash that it's not going to hit a building.
If you were really, really careful, you might be able to splatter one into Central Park. It's pretty big. But, you know...
You'd still kill a lot of people.
Oh, man. So, like, shooting down a plane over New York is going to be more effective than letting it hit a building, I guess. Or when you shoot down the plane, it's not going to hit a building?
Yeah.
But here's the problem. Now, we go through scenarios and we say, how could someone, anyone, any particular person, a New York Police Department or, you know, a military unit of some kind.
I have visions of King Kong for some reason.
Swiping
it around.
Here comes the incoming terrorist airplane. King Kong runs up on the side of the skyscraper and he's swiping at the airplane. let's consider what it takes to shoot down a plane. Well, first off, when you just throw out the word airplane, this can be something as small as, you know, an ultralight, to a private plane that holds 2 to 4 passengers, run by a single prop-driven engine, all the way up to a commercial airliner that is that has, you know, big jet engines that literally a human can stand in the intake of them and not be able to reach from the top of the intake to the bottom. Mm-hmm. Now, having
those big ones that have, like, you know, 4 seats and then a big aisle and then 4 seats and then a big aisle and then 4
and,
seats
and 2 and, stories tall in the seating area. So if we look at this variety of aircraft, now if you have an ultralight buzzing over the city of New York, I'm sure probably a sniper with the right kind of sniper rifle in a very stable platform could pick off someone like that.
Right. But to be fair, an ultralight hitting a building, I mean, really, how much damage would it do?
So then we go to...
Just bounces off the window pane.
Hey, stop that. We just washed those windows. So then we take it to, you know, a private plane, a 4-seater like a Cessna, that type of plane. Perhaps a Piper or any of those brands of private planes that are 2 to 4, maybe 6-seat private airplane. One of those can do quite a bit of damage if you plow it into a building. There was one in Texas a couple of years back. You remember that?
Mm-mm.
That guy supposedly was attempting to commit suicide, and he had cans of gasoline in the airplane with him, and he flew into the IRS building or some other government building like that, and it caused a little bit of a fuss. And, you know, but you're not going to get the kind of impact with something like that they had on 9/11, of course. But let's just assume that's what you're defending against.
Right.
Even though, like I said a minute ago, only a fool fights the last war. It's like once the terrorists showed their hand as to crashing an airplane into a building, there's now 100 million other ways that they can attack us.
Yeah.
For you to put all your eggs in that one basket and say, well, now we got them, now they can't do this. Oh. Anyway, so let's go with the private plane. There are some sniper rifles that, if you had a good stable platform and a good sniper, might be able to hit a dead shot, either to take the pilot out of a private plane like that, or possibly if you could hit the engine just right on a small private plane like that with something like a big 50 caliber sniper rifle or something, you might be able to take it out.
Certainly a helicopter could take it out. A gunman on a helicopter.
Yeah. And it's been speculated, a Wired magazine and several others speculated that that's what this bureaucrat was talking about, was a helicopter-based, like an attack not really an attack helicopter, but a gunman from a helicopter. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, first off, hitting anything from a helicopter is not easy.
Right.
Hitting another moving object from a helicopter. You're flying 100 miles an hour. He's flying 100 miles an hour. Not even that. Private planes are flying more in the 150 to 200 miles an hour. So flying at 100 miles an hour in a helicopter trying to shoot something that's flying 200 miles an hour, and you've got a target area that's the size of maybe a dinner plate.
Right. Bullets are really tiny.
Yeah, yeah.
Even big bullets are really tiny.
Now, here's the other thing about shooting a private plane. If you take a private plane and you're flying along at full speed in a private plane, and you just reach over and flap the switch and shut the engine off, you're still basically in a glider.
Right.
These have a lot of flight capability. They're not like jets. Jets fly because they have so much thrust that the small amount of airfoil that's on the wings controls, you know, by the amount of thrust that they have enough lift to take off and fly. But proportionately, the wing material to the body material is much different
right.
than a prop plane and a private plane. The vast majority of private planes that are small engine prop planes, you can shut the engine off and they can glide very well. As long as all your other controls are stable, you don't have something wrong with the plane in some other way,
mm-hmm.
A decent pilot can glide pretty easy. So I'm not even sure it's all that effective to shoot the engine of a private plane.
Right.
And we're still speculating on that's what they're talking about.
Right.
Now let's take that to a commercial plane. Having watched engine trials out at the big GE's engine testing facilities, where they take whole frozen turkeys and throw them through engines, where they take whole birds and throw them through an engine, you stand out there with a rifle, even a big 50 caliber sniper rifle, and shoot through that engine. You're not taking the plane down.
No.
They're designed for that kind of thing. Commercial engines are just a modification of the engines that they use on military engines. This is the same technology.
Mm-hmm.
And there's time after time after time, you have military engines who have been in the worst part of fighting, and they ingest, the engine itself ingests bullet after bullet after bullet, and it still flies the pilot back, and he lands on an aircraft carrier somewhere.
Because it's funny, jet engines are actually much simpler than a turbine style era,
piston
engine.
Yeah.
Because really, all you're doing is you're spraying massive amounts of jet engine fuel and lighting it on fire.
Right.
There's really not a whole lot of moving parts.
Yeah.
And
it's just a series of fans.
Yeah. You know.
So you're taking out blades of fans, and it does damage.
Right.
And you can destroy an engine that way. But, you know, if a turkey's not going to destroy an engine,
right.
then a 50 caliber bullet the size of your thumb is not going to destroy the engine. Anyway, I shouldn't even brought that up. It's just a height of arrogance from some bureaucrat. And now here's the other thing. Well,
and again, it's security theater.
It is. It absolutely is. It's just some bureaucrat shooting his big stupid mouth off.
Yeah, and it's bolstering this confidence where all of a sudden you have these New York City people who are going, "That's right, our city takes care of us." And
yeah. And that makes you more vulnerable.
Yeah.
When you have this level of arrogance that thinks, "I'm untouchable. They can't get to us now." Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I've said this a million times. I could sit down with a crew of half a dozen people, and within a few weeks and with very little funding, we could take out half the cities in the U.S.
Yeah.
If you really wanted to.
I mean, all you have to do is look at the fact that a guy who flipped the wrong switch at a power plant in Ohio cut off all the power to the eastern seaboard for
including
how long?
Huge amounts of Canada, huge amounts of the U.S.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all it takes. I mean, you know, you take down the grid to six major cities in North America in the same day, and you have massive chaos. Mm-hmm. You know, you let the people train, let the herds do the damage. Yeah. You don't even have to be there.
Yeah.
Anyway, but we're not suggesting that, or we're not threatening that. That's not the point of that. You read Bad Quaker. If you government idiots that are listening to this, don't take that as a threat. Read Bad Quaker. We say don't attack the state. Anyway, that's all we need is a raid by those people. but no, that's all the guy is doing. It's just security theater. It's his chest pounding and showing how important, self-important he is.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that wasn't even on the agenda to bring that up, but we were going to talk about the Wall Street protests and...
Anonymous, dee-dee-dee-dee-dee.
So it's been going on for a week now. There have been hundreds of arrests. There are daily confrontations between the police and the protesters, and yet I haven't seen one word on any of the major news outlets. Finally, I think it was Tuesday, CNN did a blip on it, but only because Michael Moore waddled in and had something to say, and Michael Moore somehow became the spokesman for these people. But I don't even think CNN would have covered it if it hadn't have been for his rotundness that showed up and, you know, probably found out that Anonymous was there giving out free sandwiches, so he's like pushing people out of the way to try to get in line for a free sandwich. But somehow they stuck a microphone in his face, and his mouth wasn't full of sandwich at the time. Is that enough? Have I slammed? Have we established the fact that Michael Moore is fat? Is that what we? Now I'm fat, right?
Well,
can I slam Michael Moore because I'm fat?
You know, Michael Moore irritated the New York City cops and they started shooting pellets at him, but they just bounced off.
I kind of get the image in my mind. You ever see the movie Ghostbusters?
Yeah, I was going to say the Marshmallow Man. I was so going to say the Marshmallow Man.
Oh, my poor Michael Moore. Okay, so anyway, so the protesters in Wall Street. What they're basically saying is that the banking structure, the Federal Reserve, the New York Federal Reserve, Goldman Sachs, these Wall Street bankers and financiers have been and are destroying the economy. They're looting the economy. They're pocketing hundreds of billions of dollars, sometimes legally, sometimes illegally, sometimes through the Fed just handing it straight to them. All this is going on while jobs are being crushed in the United States, where the economy in the United States is being crushed.
And our dollar is being devalued on a daily basis.
Which means all the lower income people, fixed income, retirees, people on hourly wages, their dollars are worth less each time the Fed produces another quantitative easing or any of their other goofy things that they want to call it or whatever. Every time they do that and they produce more money, each dollar is worth less, which harms the weakest people in society the most. Mm-hmm. And when they do that, of course, the people who get the money first profit the most from it, which, again, is the Wall Street banker types and financiers. So they're looting the country. They're literally looting the country with the help of Washington, D.C. So that's what the purpose of the protest is, which is all true and all legitimate.
Right.
The question becomes, if you have, they want something like, I think they're hoping to get 20,000 total protesters. They're calling for 20,000 people. They've had a few hundred and maybe 1,000 so far.
It's hard to say exactly how many, seeing as how we're not getting any coverage whatsoever.
Yeah, it's being totally ignored, even though lots of the media are centered in New York, and there's, you know, a lot of cameras around Wall Street. We're not seeing any of it on any of the mainstream reporting. So whether or not they can get 20,000 protesters is probably not likely because they're not getting the attention.
Right.
You would think in the middle of New York City that word of mouth alone would be enough to spread this out. But on the other hand, a lot of people don't like to go down and, you know, get sprayed in the face by mace and things. But the question remains, is this accomplishing anything? Is it moving us towards the ultimate goal of showing the people exactly what these bankers are doing?
Well, part of the thing is the way that they are getting information from the media sources is skewing the results of the protests, because we're not getting any coverage of the protest itself.
Right.
The thing that the protest is protesting is completely being ignored. The only thing that we're getting is the fact that there has been violence against the protesters from the New York City police. So we're seeing cop brutality.
Which is totally not the point of the thing.
Right, which is not the point of the protest. But that's what is being...
What little bit of you know, information is coming out.
That's what the YouTube videos are portraying. Mm-hmm. And that's what the outrage on the internet is portraying, is this violence against these protesters
by the cops. Yeah. So and the cops so become the bad guys.
Yeah. Instead of the point being that these bankers and these corporations are perpetrating horrific crimes against the American public.
Yeah.
That's all pushed aside.
Yeah.
And it becomes an issue of cop brutality.
Right.
Well, the American public has proven time and time again that it doesn't matter how often you shove police brutality in their face, they don't care.
Right. To a large extent, they're willing to tolerate the police beating you up or spraying you in the face with pepper spray, as long as they can get to work and back and not have to face the zombie masses.
Right. And that's the thing. When you say Goldman Sachs is stealing money from you, and they're making your grocery bills higher, and they're making your gas bills higher, and they're taking money from you, that is, they're harming me.
Right.
They're affecting my family.
Right.
That breeds anger.
Right.
But when you're saying cops beat up protesters in New York City, that doesn't affect me any.
The vast number of working Americans then go, well, they ought to be getting a job and getting out of there and leaving them folks alone in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
That's the mentality. It's like, well, you shouldn't be down there protesting anyway. Why don't you have a job, stupid hippie?
Yeah.
That's the thought.
Yeah.
So it's counterproductive. It doesn't accomplish the goal of pointing out that Goldman Sachs is robbing you blind.
Yeah.
And not just Goldman Sachs. We're picking on Goldman Sachs, but there's...
This is the typical, you know, bait and switch.
Exactly.
You get one con man that causes a disturbance over here and distracts you from
the fact... They can't see your hands.
Oh, they can't see my hands. That doesn't work so well without seeing my hands. Anyway, you get one con man distracting you while another con man sneaks up behind you and steals your wallet.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's a good example. That was an active trick in the old days when they would have a snake oil salesman would come into town, and he'd be putting on his show, and then you would have hecklers in the audience that actually worked for the snake oil salesman, and they would be out in the audience saying, "He's a liar! Look at him!" And the whole time, this is distracting from the other operative who's walking through around the crowd pickpocketing.
Yeah.
It was part of the thing. So they were making money even if they didn't sell any of the snake oil because they're pickpocketing the crowd.
Right.
So that's a good comparison. Now, Anonymous...
And you know, it's entirely possible... The conspiracy side of your brain goes, well, that Anonymous is in on this, and this is a plant, and Anonymous is working for... But I don't think that's the case. I honestly think that they really are trying to bring publicity to the fact that these horrible crimes are being committed.
Yeah.
But when you fight the state using the state's tools, the state wins.
Exactly. Yeah, and you're pretty much playing into their hands when you go down there and you push your lines out into the street and the cops push back, and you know you're just playing the game exactly the way they want you to play.
Mm-hmm.
Now you could make the argument that each time that it makes the news that somebody gets beat down by the cops, or each time it makes the news when, in the case of this, there's one that's becoming very famous, YouTube video where there's several girls that are just standing there. They're just standing behind the police barricade. They're not pushing the barricade. They're not pushing the cops. And there's actually a cop standing right next to them who looks perfectly content. He's just standing there doing his job. And the girls are just standing there. And another cop just walks up and just sprays them right in the face. And actually partly hits the cop who's standing there, too. Mm-hmm. And he gets this, the good cop, bad cop. The good cop gets this look on his face like, you know, what was that guy thinking?
Yeah.
You know? So the argument there is that, well, the more people that see this, the more they'll realize, you know, the nature of the state. They'll realize the nature of the fight that we're facing. And that does work to a certain extent. It does open some eyes as to the brutality of the state and the, you know, to quote Monty Python, the violence inherent in the system. Mm-hmm. But on a larger degree, it distracts from the main point.
Human beings have an amazing ability to ignore when other people are being brutalized.
Yeah.
If it doesn't affect them.
Yeah, there's like 6 million dead Jews that could attest to that in one country alone. People have a tendency that if it's not directly affecting them, mm-hmm. then they might have compassion. They might empathize with your position.
It's none of their business.
Yeah. Ultimately, they look the other way, or they think, well, they probably deserve that somehow, mm-hmm. you know. So it's not really bringing the kind of focus that we would like to say, these people are robbing you. Mm-hmm. They're taking money from your children, from your grandchildren. They're enslaving future generations. That's what these Wall Street people are doing. Mm-hmm. They don't see it that way, though.
And again, I think, you know, you're lashing out at the puppet. You're lashing out at the dangly thing that distracts you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The corporations and the banks and the governments, even.
Yeah.
Are not the issue.
Right. You're seeing the straw men that are hanging out there that are made for you to punch at.
Yeah.
That's it. You're not dealing with the puppet master. You're not dealing with the state itself, the nature of the state and the nature of the beast. You're ignoring the real monster. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the problem with Anonymous, too. Anonymous put out a... Did you see the video that they put out threatening the New York Police Department?
I didn't see it, but I saw that they had put one out.
Yeah, it was had a very impressive intro. Really cool intro that literally took about close to half of the YouTube video was the intro. And then the exit in the end, you know, it was very dramatic. And so that all boiled down to a sort of a veiled threat to hack something that the New York Police use on the internet. So, you know, like whatever website or something that, well, you know, here's the thing. You could completely give a denial of service attack to every New York City associated website, and it wouldn't change the fact that a New York City cop, when you get in his face and tell him, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. Yeah. Let's go to New Yorkers in general. Let's take the stereotypical New Yorker. Let's, in your mind, you just imagine what you think of as the stereotypical New Yorker. He's standing there. You tell him, get out of my face. He's more likely to get up in your face and tell you, you can't tell me what to do. Mm-hmm. So now you take the stereotypical New York cop and you tell him, get out of my face. After he hits you in the head and sprays you in the face, then he'll say, you can't tell me what to do.
Right.
So telling a New York cop he'd better back off is kind of like slapping a lion with a steak, you know? How dare you, lion? Back, shark. Smack that shark in the nose with a steak.
Seal steak.
Yeah. Here's a nice cut of, or some calamari. Back, shark. I will hit you in the nose with calamari. You're just going to anger a New York cop by getting in his face and threatening him. And whether that's in a cyber threat or whether it's on a sidewalk or anything else. I mean, it's just the nature of people in that region that they don't take threats well, whether they're in authority or whether they're not, and especially if they're in authority. Mm-hmm. So...
And again, Anonymous is allowing itself to be distracted from the point.
Yeah.
You know, I don't... It goes back to, I don't understand why Anonymous is holding protests in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
The power of Anonymous comes from the fact...
That they're anonymous.
That they're not... They're not people.
Yeah.
You don't have a person that you can go mace in the face, or that you can go... Mace in the face. Hey, that rhymed. That you can go shoot or put in prison or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, they are a faceless group that exists in an anonymity on the internet and that can strike anytime, anywhere, for any reason. That is what Anonymous is, and that is the power of Anonymous. And when you strip all of those things away from them and you just put them as people...
Yeah.
Standing on the street in New York,
mm-hmm.
they're completely powerless.
In that sense, Anonymous could be the ultimate anti-state power,
mm-hmm.
because the state is, in a sense, the evil side of Anonymous. The
right.
state is a faceless, soulless, individual-less entity of vast proportion. I was talking in a different thing the other day about a hill of ants.
Mm-hmm.
A hill of ants has no individual intelligence. One ant is a very limited intelligence little creature just doing a very limited set of behavior that he understands, and he just repeats that behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Any particular ant in the ant hill, there's no great intelligence within any individual ant.
And they're not necessary to
yeah,
ant hill
any,
survival.
Any ant can be killed at any time, even the queen, and it's not going to kill the whole hill. They will immediately start feeding the different kind of food to one of the eggs, and they'll make a new queen. It's, you know, it's not that easy like the people in the commercials want you to believe.
Mm-hmm.
So even the queen ant itself has no superior intelligence to the other ants. All she does is sit there and make eggs.
Mm-hmm.
She's just an egg producer. She's not a queen in the sense of a ruler or an intelligence or a driving force or anything. So nowhere in the anthill do you have a single ant that has an outstanding intelligence. They are all just simply tiny little wheels in a giant machine. And yet, this anthill has a massive amount of intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
It can move its entire self to a new region. It constantly seeks new food. It responds to predators. It responds to outside threats. It responds to the environment. It will
create complex labyrinth systems.
Yeah. Ants will do things like herd aphids, and they have an elaborate process where they capture, drug, herd, and milk aphids. And yet, no one ant knows any of this process. Together, their intelligence is unstoppable.
Mm-hmm.
Together, that entity is unstoppable. But independently, each ant is just a stupid little exoskeletal bug.
Mm-hmm.
They're nothing more than a bug. Well, that's the state. The state does not have any standout intelligence. Look at these people. Look at the
mm-hmm.
brightest and the best of them. You think, really and truly, watch speeches by Nancy Pelosi, by John Bonner, by... there's an interview with Harry Reid where he tries to make the argument that taxation is voluntary. I can't remember the interviewer that... that does that. If I can find that, I'll link to it
that one. I don't remember his name. The senator who was like, you know, the island will tip over.
yeah. It was. I can't remember which island it was in reference to, like Guam or somebody. He was worried about moving too many military people onto the base there because the island might tip over and sink. Really,
yeah.
Genius. But you look at Barack Obama, is supposed to be this mountain of intelligence. He's not. Look at when he talks and when he speaks. If he's not reading something someone else wrote for him, he's an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing was with, you know, everybody. It was blatantly obvious with Bush that the man had no idea what he was talking about at any particular time. You look at President Bubba, you know, Clinton was pretty much just bumbling around, being controlled by his people. Mm-hmm. We were told how vastly intelligent Hillary was, but then she gets out on the campaign trail and you start seeing her in spontaneous moments, and she's as stupid as the rest of them. Mm-hmm. So no one in the state is of any kind of standout intelligence.
And you know, a lot of, specifically Republicans, will make statements saying, well, you know, if people are really that intelligent, they'll get a job in private industry. Hmm. But look at the CEOs of corporations, because they're dumb as a box of rocks, too.
Pretty much. You don't have to be that bright. You have to have connections.
Right.
You have to be in the right groups.
And there are people working in the private industry who are incredibly intelligent.
Right.
You know, we have engineers and architects and
doctors and even lawyers.
Yeah, and all of these people can be vastly intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not the CEOs. They're not people in charge.
They may run a company. They may run their own company, or they may be the head of a small company. I remember watching the interview with the, was it Gibson Guitars that the government is beating up right now?
Yeah.
I think it's Gibson.
Yeah.
And I remember watching the interviews with the CEO of that company. And he's a pretty sharp guy, you know. He's not anything special. I think if he was to be among some of the engineers I used to work with at GE, he would probably be considered average. Mm-hmm. But probably among CEOs, he's pretty smart.
Right.
You know, but then again, he's on that's not the same level of corporation as these guys at Goldman Sachs and, you know, Bank of America and Chase Manhattan and places like that.
Yeah.
Or even GE.
Yeah.
Watch an interview with Jeff Immelt. When I used to work at GE, and for part of the time when I was at GE.
You said every other time you've said when I worked in aviation.
Yeah, I know. But I mentioned GE earlier, so I have to admit it. I did work for the Beast. When Jeff Immelt took over, we were all kind of embarrassed because there were much better, there were smarter people that were available than Jeff Immelt within the company.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all, there was this massive saddening among those of us who knew what was going on. And it was like, oh, no. They picked him, really?
Mm-hmm.
What genius did this? And then the guy who should have got that job, the guy who was actually had some intelligence, was like, all right, I'm out of here. And he went to work for Caterpillar.
Mm-hmm.
And let's take Warren Buffett for an example. This brilliant genius, Warren Buffett, who basically, well, was he really a genius? He had a pretty good upstart from his dad. I mean, if you really learn the Warren Buffett story, you know, I don't know. I haven't met the man. So all I can say is he said publicly, he said some pretty stupid things.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't know where we were going with that other than there. Oh, I know what it was. These people are not standout people.
Right.
These people that are the state. Warren Buffett is as much the state as Barack Obama, mm-hmm, or the head of Goldman Sachs. This is what we're talking about, the state. They are this one entity, this hill of ants that has no body and has no central nervous system, and yet it functions as one entity.
Mm-hmm.
It thinks, it moves, it motivates, it drives the anthill to move to a new location or to invade a new area, or, you know, produce food through ants way down in their anthill actually grow, they farm types of mold and things like this and harvest it. And they, you know, they have actual farms within their anthills.
Mm-hmm.
And none of them know what they're doing. And
right.
Yet it all functions. And that's how the state works. But that's also how Anonymous kind of works.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the strength of Anonymous could be. And something like Anonymous or Anonymous could be the counterweight to the state that could bring the state down,
mm-hmm,
if it functions and stays within its strengths, if it works within its strengths, not within its weaknesses. And that's really, if you look at it, think of it this way. in the Irish struggle of trying to gain independence from the English, the Irish had two mechanisms to deal with the English. They had the military arm, which was the IRA, the Irish Republican Army, and they had Sinn Féin, which was the political arm. And so, and they were disassociated from each other. Mm-hmm. So no one in Sinn Féin could be arrested for anything that went on in the IRA. Mm-hmm. And there were no mutual memberships so that you could, if you could go through and pick out individual people, the IRA still lived and Sinn Féin still lived. Mm-hmm. So this was the great strength of the Irish resistance. So the IRA would go out and do horrific things. They would bomb a school bus, or they would bomb a public bus, or they would blow up a car on a street, or they would do some terrible thing. And Sinn Féin would go, oh, that's bad. We shouldn't do that. Now let's work to negotiate this. And they would use the strength that had been given them by the IRA mm-hmm. to move a political agenda into place. Mm-hmm. That worked very well for the Irish in gaining their independence from the English. But on the other hand, you know, if the English had ever really decided to do something about the Irish problem, they really could have just went in and started crushing everybody.
Right.
You know, if the English state was of a different nature, it could have just gone in a Soviet style and taken right. out all the Sinn Féin, and there would have been, you know, but they played fair. The English played fair, and so Sinn Féin was successful. In that sense, Anonymous, if they were to stay with that headless, bodiless model like what we're describing, they could counter the state in the militant form. Mm-hmm. Well, the market, which is also an ambiguous... there is no head that drives the market. There is no central intelligence to the market. There is no specific player in the market who is stand up above the others that really stands out. The market is an entity that functions in nature and brings about wealth and prosperity to all who are a part of the market. So in that sense, if the market were a completely a black market, mm-hmm. black market in wages, a black market in goods and services, in commodities, functioning outside the reach of the state. And if Anonymous were an entirely black market force working against the state, then you could have that balance, kind of like Sinn Féin and mm-hmm. the IRA had, where the market can officially say, well, none of us have anything to do with those hackers.
Right.
They're certainly not a part of us, and so there can be no cross arrests, and the hackers are like, hey, we don't have anything to do with those market guys, mm-hmm. and yet they're moving in the same direction. And so as the state attempts to fight the faceless, headless Anonymous, it's fighting nothing. It's striking at shadows.
Right.
Well, the market just grows stronger and stronger and stronger. I don't know, did I say that in a way that makes any sense?
I think so. Yeah, I think that, you know, like we've said so often, you have to fight your enemy with your strengths,
right.
not its strengths.
Right.
And right now, as it stands, we have the printing press. You know?
Yeah, the internet.
And the printing press single-handedly took out the fist of the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Catholic Church still exists.
Right.
But
not in a state form.
Removed the state from the Catholic Church.
Yeah, exactly. Because the Church had kind of, with the fall of Rome and the dwindling of the Eastern mm-hmm. Empire, the state had kind of stepped in and had begun to act as a state in many areas, and even propping up local kings as the state.
Mm-hmm.
But when the printing press
liberated the Catholic Church from the clutches of the state.
Yeah, yeah. In that sense, it did. It allowed the Catholic Church to go back to its own business and not have to try to fill the role of the state. Mm-hmm. And that allowed, in many ways, you know, people don't realize it, but in the Middle Ages, all the way up until the late 1600s, the state almost didn't exist in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were little pockets, you know, and previous to what we're talking about there, when the Catholic Church had a certain amount of state-like power, and there were horrific things that took place, like the Spanish Inquisition and, mm-hmm. and things like that. But overall, the state as we know it today did not exist. Mm-hmm. It didn't really start to become birthed into a central form until well up about 1700 or so, and then the state still didn't really have power in Europe until closer to 1900, when by that time the German state had begun to formulate. You know, Bismarck had brought the German Confederacy together into a state in the mid 1800s. France had been a state for a couple hundred years already. Right. England had been a true state. In a sense, England had been a state since the Norman invasion, but it was a toothless state,
right.
and didn't really come into its own until after Cromwell came into power and then was defeated, and
right.
then the real English state was birthed at that time. And, you know, so the state really didn't come into any kind of fullness until about 1900. So with Gutenberg and the printing press, it freed the Catholic Church from trying to fill that role as the state and allowed
right.
it to. Hey, did you see the quote that the current Pope made about the state?
Mm-mm.
Oh, man, I got to find this and quote it.
Also
Here it is. Pope Benedict. Okay, here's the quote from Pope. My lips are not working right. Here's the quote from Pope Benedict the 16th. Is that what he is? Yeah, XVI, that's 16. Pope Benedict...
That felt like an
XVI?
A law and order.
XVI. Here's his quote. He said, quote, "We have seen how power became divorced from right, how power opposed right and crushed it, so that the state became an instrument for destroying right. A highly organized band of robbers capable of threatening the whole world and driving it to the edge of the abyss." Now, and of course, when he's saying right, he's not talking about right and left politics.
Right.
He's talking about what's right and what's wrong.
Right.
And so he clearly, what the Pope says very, very clearly here is that the state is the force that's the instrument that's destroying what's right. A highly organized band of robbers capable of threatening the whole world and driving it to the edge of the abyss.
Yeah.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's a bad phrase to say. But, you know, I mean, that's coming from the Pope, that he's recognizing and he's saying publicly that this is what the state is.
Mm-hmm.
The state, literally... Robert Higgs, in reference to this quote, somebody said, well, yeah, but, you know, they made some kind of anti-Pope statement. And Robert Higgs said, you should read more about what this guy says. You might be surprised. He kind of indicated that the Pope is maybe a little bit of an anarchist.
Hmm.
I mean, that kind of sounds a little anarchist.
That definitely, if that statement had come from... You know,
Murray Rothbard.
Yeah, it would have been, you know, crazy Murray and his anarchist ranting.
Yeah.
But you know, coming from the Pope,
a highly organized band of robbers. Well, there was another very famous church individual who said that same thing. You know, pirates and emperors—they're really the same thing. I love that little pirates and emperors.
But you know, I mean, we have the technology right now to spread information far more quickly than we have ever been able to do it before.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the ability to organize a revolution that happens not with violence and not with killing people and taking over. We have the ability...
And let me interrupt you. And not a revolution where we just elect another guy who we're convinced is going to be good.
Right. And not a revolution where... You know, geographically, our location has a revolution.
Right.
A global revolution in terms of what we want from mm-hmm. our future and what we don't want from our future. And you know, people are getting sick and tired of having food be laced with, you know, petrochemicals and, and these things that are not edible, and medicine that just makes you sicker, and government that devalues your money, and, you know, individually, it makes you angry that this thing is doing that, and this corporation is doing that, and the medical, but...
All these are branches. They're not striking the root.
You, when you get so angry at every single one of them, and you see all of them behaving in the same exact pattern, then you start to step back and say, there's something bigger here.
Yeah.
You know, this is the problem.
Yeah.
But there's something behind it.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, I want to bring this around because I kind of got... I kind of got taken to task on something by somebody that I have a lot of respect for. That what we're not doing in our podcasts and what I'm not doing in my articles is I'm not giving our audience the opportunity to become involved in like action assignments.
Right.
Like this is what you need to do. And I was told that I could bring my audience into, you know, make them feel more like we're not hopeless. Mm-hmm. We have hope if I can express what the audience can do. And oddly enough, you know, I thought I'd done that, but evidently I hadn't. But what can we do? We can promote free markets. Mm-hmm. Free markets, black markets, mm-hmm. underground markets, free exchange between individuals. Lack of dependence upon the state and all of its tentacles. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying hug a tree, you know, live zero impact on the environment. That's right. Not the point.
You know, I buy my pants from Walmart.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And I, you know, I've got soda sitting here that I drink.
Mm-hmm.
But...
I don't drink soda. I don't drink soda.
Uh-huh.
or actually, we're using foreign words here to some of our audience. Pop.
But, you know, you do what you can.
Exactly.
You know, radicalism is not the goal.
Right, right.
The goal is...
Slowly chip away the stone. It's the constant drop of water that wears the stone away.
Yeah.
A lot of our listeners are stuck in either corporate jobs or even government jobs or in a position where they just can't, they simply can't step away from the state. They can't step away from the corporations. They can't step away from their jobs, their careers. They can't leave their retirement. But what you can do is little things in your life, you can teach yourself how to do stuff that the state has in the past done for you. You can teach yourself how to be independent on little things. So that, because here's the thing, at some point in time, the state is going to fall.
Right.
Now, when the state falls, it's going to take a lot of people with it. This is the really ugly part of the message we have here at Bad Quaker. The state will fall, and when it falls, it's going to be really ugly, and it's going to take a lot of people with it.
Mm-hmm.
So what our job, the action item that we can take away from this, is to teach ourselves and our children and our grandchildren how to move ourselves into an independent sphere so that when the state falls, then we can function independently.
And the other thing that it's twofold, because it's not only protecting yourself and getting yourself as independent as possible, it's also looking at the state.
Yeah.
It's pointing to the state. It's videotaping the state. It's sharing the state. It's it is pointing out when the state does truly horrific things.
Yes.
And it's pointing at it, and it's looking at it, and it's seeing what the state is doing, and it is not attacking the state.
Right. This thing, and, what the Pope said right here, he didn't attack anybody.
Right.
He just pointed it out. Right, yeah. There it is. It's obvious. It's a robber.
And that's, I mean, that's a really hard thing to ask people to do.
Yeah.
Is to look at something that is actively attacking people and actively stealing from you and say, look at it, see what it is, understand that it's evil, and do nothing about it.
Yep. Point to it and don't touch it.
That's a terribly hard thing to ask of someone. But that's the only way that you can, you know.
Yeah. Step back, let it develop. Let it behave like that. Let it grow. Let the state come to its fruition so that it can fall and die. Mm-hmm. And so that we don't have to deal with it. It would be a lot easier for me to say, oh, well, let's elect this magic guy and he'll come in and fix the state and keep it in control for another generation.
Right.
But that would be horribly selfish on my part.
Yeah.
Because I want the state dead.
Yeah. And the only way to do that is to let it die.
Yeah. Not keep it on life preserves. Not attack it and make it stronger. Yeah. Not try to function within it and fix its flaws. Just step away from it, point at it.
And pull support.
Yep. And let it die, and be prepared for when it dies, and don't be within reach.
Yeah.
So. Okay, so one last thing I wanted to mention. We've had some load times and some glitches with the website, and we're trying to deal with the hosting service on this. So if you're having problems downloading badquaker.com, or if you're having problems trying to get to the website, be sure and drop the admin a notice, badquaker@badquaker.com, and we can take this information, go to the hosting service, and see if we can't resolve these issues. We do have a couple things we're working on that may take care of it. So, and again, this is Ben.
I'm Ty.
Thanks a lot, folks.